May it please the court. This case has two issues that involve the assessment of guideline enhancements and guideline criminal history points. The guideline enhancement is under section 2L1.2, and it has to do with the enhancement based on a drug trafficking offense. The criminal history points are a difference between when and how long the sentence imposed was. That same issue is the underlying issue with respect to the drug trafficking enhancement. What was the sentence imposed?
Just to make sure, your client got 30 months?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is he anywhere near being released at this point?
He's close to being released. His release date now under the Bureau of Prisons website is in September. So if this court...
September, so we better decide this before September.
Yes, Your Honor.
But, I mean, the point is... All right, so that's 9 months from now. So,
and if the court were to decide in his favor, he essentially would be eligible for release right now, even if the district court were to impose the highest level under the guideline range when the district court actually imposed the lowest level
so
under the guideline range.
Basically, in a sense, this dispute is moot, although I wouldn't, heaven forbid, I should be so bold as to say the case is moot, but it's of little practical significance at this point.
Other than his time in prison, because if you decide this case within the next few months, he still is going to have half a year of his life, mm-hmm. half a year of liberty back that he was not supposed to have
eight
served.
Or 9 months in prison.
Yes. However long is that time period for his release from your decision is part of his life that is not moot.
And what authority do you have that time served should be disregarded for purposes of a 12-level enhancement pursuant to Sentencing Guideline 2L1.2B1B when the sentencing court is silent about how to treat time served?
There are two sets of authority. The first that we would go under is the plain language of the guideline itself. 2L1.2 makes its sentence imposed determination based on 4A1.2. That's the cross-reference for the definition. 4A1.2, by the plain terms of the guideline itself, says that if a sentence of imprisonment is suspended, then the term sentence of imprisonment only refers to the portion that is not suspended. And the guideline application note to that states that it is the pronounced sentence, not the length of time actually served. And that is key in a case such as this, because in section 4A1.2, the guideline doesn't say when the sentence must be suspended. In other words, there's no rule saying that it only counts if the suspension is at the original imposition. If the suspension occurs at a later time, that's been contemplated in the guideline application note when it states that it is not the time actually served, but rather the length of sentence pronounced. So the plain language under that section of the guidelines, which is applicable both for 2L1.2 and for criminal history purposes, is the primary authority. Of course, this court in Rodriguez-Para held that a sentence that is fully suspended is not counted as a sentence imposed under 2L1.2.
Okay,
once again,
so Rodriguez-Para dealt with the same provision, same section of 2L1.2, but a different state statute. Is that the difference?
It dealt with a different state statute, and in that case, this court was not required to deal with a later suspension. In other words, it didn't have to deal with the question that you're grappling with here and that the Tenth Circuit addressed in Crystal, which is what do you do with that initial time period prior to suspension of the sentence? Rodriguez-Para was simply a fully suspended sentence. If you look at what the court did in Landeros-Areola, and this court did in Landeros-Areola, and then the Tenth Circuit opinion in Crystal. You have this court and the Tenth Circuit both looking at a law under Colorado that is the functional equivalent of this law in Oklahoma. And as the court in Landeros-Areola pointed out, both of these laws are essentially the same as former Rule 35B. All of the laws give the original sentencing court, not some other authority, not a prison official, but the original sentencing court, the authority, even during the pendency of an appeal, to retain jurisdiction and to go back, and in the language of the Oklahoma statute, to modify its sentence and impose another penalty. If you look at what the court did in Mr. Real-Sola's case, the Oklahoma sentencing court utilized its statutory authority, and it went back and it changed its sentence within the permitted statutory time period. The order, which we've attached as an appendix to our reply brief, the gray brief, stated that it was changing its sentence from a sentence of 8 years to due to a sentence of 8 years suspended, 8 for 8. There was no extraneous time period that was left unaccounted for. There was no reference to a credit for time served. There was no reference back to the original sentences somehow.
Did the 8 years start running from the second pronouncement or from the first?
Because it was a modification of the actual sentence that was imposed, it would have began running from the initial imposition.
Well, so
it's the same sentence.
Can't ignore. You said they didn't get credit, but he did get credit.
There was,
he got credit for that year because he spent the year in prison, and now there's going to be 7 more years that he's not in prison, but he's under the suspended sentence.
Not necessarily. In another analogous context would be where someone waits in pretrial detention, for example, for a period of a year, and at the end they get a sentence of 3 months. What happens to the remaining 9 months? They don't have a sentence of a year. They have a sentence pronounced of 3 months, and that's what the guideline application note requires as well. The guideline application note says it's the sentence pronounced, not the length of the sentence actually served. If that guideline application note weren't there, if the guideline itself didn't say a fully suspended sentence did not count as a sentence of imprisonment, then I wouldn't be making this argument. But it's essentially the same as in that context where you have time that should not, under the ultimate determination of that state court, have been sentenced.
Doesn't the plain language contemplate that the person has been in prison because it says any time within 12 months after a sentence is imposed or within 12 months after probation has been revoked? In other words, in the latter case, after probation has been revoked, you know the person's been in prison, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And this is a sentence imposed. Now, it doesn't. Does this allow an increase in the sentence? I doubt it. But it sort of, pardon me?
I was going to say it does not, Your Honor. Under Oklahoma law, it does not allow an increase in the sentence.
So it presumes that the person has been imprisoned.
It does. And
within that 12-month period.
But it can only modify the unserved portion, right?
No, it can modify the entire sentence. It's simply the same.
Well, once you've been in prison, as people were just noting, you've been in prison. So within the first 12 months that you're in prison, basically the court has discretion to reconsider that.
That is correct. And the question then is, how does the guideline take into account this period of imprisonment? Under 4A1.2, there's no rule to say that you go back and you reconstruct what the Oklahoma court order should have said to say
yeah,
that, for example, that you give credit.
Yeah, but the word modify means you alter it prospectively. It doesn't mean it's not a new sentence. I mean, I know what a new sentence is. We vacate a sentence, we send it back. That's a new sentence. This is a modification, and so you're modifying what is yet to happen.
There's nothing
that, to me, doesn't take away the almost 12 months he already served.
There's nothing under Oklahoma law that the government's pointed to make that be the legal conclusion. There's nothing in the actual language of the court order itself, which said 8 years to do, suspended for 8 years with conditions of probation, that would support that determination under Oklahoma law. There's nothing in the guideline that applies 4A1.2 or its application note that says that you would look at what time he actually served rather than what sentence was eventually pronounced, even though that the guideline says exactly the opposite. You look at the pronounced sentence and not the length of time actually served. The Tenth Circuit in Crystal dealt with this exact issue under Colorado law. And as I said before, it's a Colorado law that's the functional equivalent. It gives the original sentencing court the jurisdiction to go back and change its sentence. The Tenth Circuit looked at Colorado law. Was there any provision that allowed or that treated the time period already served as some form of the sentence that still remained? And the Tenth Circuit said no, there was no such provision in Colorado law. The Tenth Circuit looked at the actual provision of the Colorado order at issue, and there was no crediting for time served, there was no reference to time already served. And the Tenth Circuit decided in Crystal that, therefore, the original sentence had no longer any legal existence, and the sentence imposed was the sentence that was eventually imposed through the modification by the original district court. That's the same process in Oklahoma that you had.
How do we give effect to the words, any unserved portion?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
In the statute, the Oklahoma statute, may modify any unserved portion of the sentence. Am I reading the statute wrong?
Your Honor, the portion that I'm reading states, any time within 12 months after a sentence is imposed or within 12 months after probation has been revoked, the court imposing sentence or revocation of probation may modify such sentence or revocation by directing that another penalty be imposed if the court is satisfied that the best interests of the public will not be jeopardized.
Mine says may modify any unserved portion of the sentence by directing that in another penalty be imposed if the court is satisfied that the best interests of the public will not be jeopardized. The 2007 version of the law.
And I believe that's what I'm looking at as well. I'm not sure why that it would be reading any different. I'm looking at the West
version. Okay. Well, I will go back and double-check that. If it said any unserved portion, how does that affect your argument?
I think it would still have to depend on what the guideline says and what the Oklahoma court order says. In the case of Landeros-Areola, this court looked at what the Colorado courts did. Did the court order provide for suspension of sentence? Did the court directly sentence the person to probation? And if both were permitted under Colorado law, the court looked to what the Colorado court order said. In this case, you have the plain language of the Oklahoma court order, which does not state that any portion of that time already served remains as unsuspended. It would have been very easy for the court order to have said 8 years to do changed or modified to 8 years with 7 suspended and credit for time served. But that was simply not the basis of the order that was actually issued. And at the end of the day, if there is an ambiguity either in the application of the Oklahoma law and the court order issued out of Oklahoma, or an ambiguity in the guideline itself, because the guideline doesn't tell you exactly what to do with provisions like this where suspension occurs after a period of time. In both of those cases, this court has issued opinions that would compel a finding for the defendant. Under Herrera-Solorzano, the court faced a situation where a Texas judgment purported to impose both imprisonment and a period of probation. And although there was reference to suspension of sentence, the court saw that there was an ambiguity in the order, that both were possible under Texas law, and that the ambiguity meant that the government, as the proponent of the enhancement, had not satisfied its burden to show that the enhancement was applicable. If there's an ambiguity in the statute under Bustillos-Peña, this court applied the rule of lenity. And in this case, at a minimum, the guideline, which is the same guideline as interpreted in Bustillos-Peña, has an ambiguity, a different ambiguity. And that ambiguity would be, what do you do with the period of time that was served prior to a change of the sentence? A change of the sentence that changed under the plain reading of the Oklahoma order, the entire order. And that would also compel a finding for Mr. Real-Sola to find that neither the 12-level enhancement should have applied, nor the 2 criminal history points, but rather just the 1 criminal history point. And I'll reserve my time for rebuttal. Thank
you. Okay, thank you very much. Ms. O'Malley.
May it please the court. This is really a very narrow dispute. The only issue, as you have identified, is whether or not the 341 days that Mr. Real-Sola served in an Oklahoma penitentiary for a drug trafficking crime should actually count. And the common sense answer to that is, yes, of course it should count. He served the time. Moreover, he has not shown any law, whether case law or statutory, or any evidence to suggest that that time should not count. And indeed, Your Honor, if this were taking place in Oklahoma and the issue was the revocation of the suspension of his sentence, he would certainly be making the exact opposite argument that, of course, he should get credit for that time served.
Well, but isn't your counsel opposite saying, in essence, he did? Because, I mean, the modified sentence, in his view, relates back to the start. In other words, it's not a new 8 years. It is 8 years starting from the original sentence.
Well,
he's getting credit for time served. Otherwise, if it was a new sentence, fresh start, no credit, then wouldn't he get 8 years from that moment of the second sentencing?
Well, yes, Your Honor. I have to say I'm not sure I understand how, in practical effect, that would work. As Your Honor noted, it is a modification. It is not a reconsideration. And I think that's an important element.
It's also not a restarting of the time. And there's all this argument about he's not getting credit for time served. But, and I don't remember the dates here, but if it was 2008 that he was originally sentenced, then it would go to 2016. Then he's sentenced again in 2009. It's still going to 2016. So that year has passed and he's gotten credit for it. Otherwise, it'd go to 2017.
Well, Your Honor, actually, if the sentence were suspended rather than it being on probation, that would be correct. But the sentence was suspended, which means if at any time he comes back into Oklahoma after having basically committed the crime that he's committed here, they can revoke the suspension and he would have to serve the time.
Within those 8 years, or no? You're saying
no.
It doesn't matter any time? 20 years from now, he can do something, and this 8 years comes popping back up?
Yes, Your Honor. The suspension of a sentence is always hanging over his head, unlike probation, where he can say, if I keep my nose clean for 8 years, then I'm free and clear of this. But a suspended sentence says, we have imposed the sentence on you, but I'm suspending it, and if you behave yourself, you won't have to serve time.
So if he reoffended, would he have to serve 8 years, or would he have to serve seven?
He would have to serve 7 years and however many days it is. He would not have to serve that 341. It would, in fact,
how do we know that?
Yes, Your Honor. Because it would be a due process violation to force him to serve those additional.
Because you believe it relates back to the entire.
It has to. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Your Honor, it does have to. This is a case where the fact that it doesn't say time served on the order does not mean that he's not getting credit. It would be unconstitutional for him not to get credit for that time served.
I'm trying to motion to my courtroom deputy. Sorry.
Okay, so the suspended sentence in Oklahoma does not work like deferred adjudication in Texas, then?
No, Your Honor. Deferred adjudication is where a sentence has not been imposed. In this case, the sentence was imposed. It was 8 years. Now, at the point that was set in advance.
And what would trigger him going back in?
Well, at this point, if Oklahoma extradited him, that would trigger his going back in. According to the
because
PSR.
Because of committing this offense?
Yes, Your Honor.
Federal offense?
It was one of the terms of the standard probation terms. It would apply while the sentence was suspended.
So you agree, though, that the modification that they can modify regarding a time already served and not just the time to be served under the Oklahoma law?
No, Your Honor. I don't think there can be any modification to the time actually served. It was served. Time was served.
But that it relates back. Your argument is the same as that it relates back to the previous time, whereas it's not a going forward modification.
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct. It's not a going forward. It's just saying, essentially, if it said on the order, or in fact, if there had been an actual judgment rather than just the order that modified the sentence, if it had said time served, there would be no discussion here because.
So is it your position also that it doesn't say may modify any unserved portion of the sentence?
Your Honor, I was looking at what I believe to be.
Your version?
I don't, Your Honor.
Okay.
I believe
well,
that
I'm
that is
have
the more
an errant version.
It could be, or it could be that I do. I think it's the more reasonable and logical way for this to read because that is the only way it can be constitutional. It couldn't be that they come back after a year under this judicial review statute and say, all right, we're suspending the remainder of your sentence and deporting you, but if you come back, you're serving the full 8 years. That simply would not be constitutional. He served his time. And there is no issue with the plain language of the sentencing guidelines here, which say very clearly the only thing that counts is the time he actually served. And there's no dispute that he served 341 days here.
How do you distinguish Crystal?
Your Honor, Crystal really is a product of Colorado law. Both Landeros and Crystal would have been decided differently if they'd been decided in Oklahoma rather than Colorado. Because, in fact, there are material differences both in the RITP program that was the.
May I suggest that when the government and the public defender joint issue on this kind of state law intensive case that you quote the state law and don't just cite it and describe it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Then we wouldn't have, just for the future, then we wouldn't have it, because your brief doesn't even quote it. It just says, Oklahoma law says this, blank. That, which is why Judge Elrod may not be referring to the same version that you were looking at. Who knows?
Yes, Your Honor, but actually the Oklahoma law is very straightforward. And
well, you'll have to, well, you're free to send a letter, a 28J letter, quoting it for us.
Yes, Your Honor, I will be happy to do that.
If it were so straightforward, we wouldn't be having oral argument in the Fifth Circuit on what it meant, would we?
Well, if it had said what Judge Elrod said that it should say, basically, then no, we would not be having this discussion. There is, however, a major difference between the two programs. The judicial review law in Oklahoma just says after a certain period of time or before a certain period of time, we can review your sentence again. And in fact, here, right up front, the judge said, come back on a date certain and I may modify your sentence. On the other hand, the RITP that was at issue in Landeros and also, I believe, in Crystal, they said if you complete a program, which is similar to boot camp in Texas, then you can come back and essentially it would all go away. In that case, as this court said in Landeros, there is really only one option, and that is to replace it with probation, because in Colorado you can't have probation and suspension. That is not the case in Oklahoma. The Oklahoma provision is more like what in Texas is called shock probation.
I was just thinking of shock probation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Serve a little while, but then the rest is
probation. Exactly, Your Honor. So that's a better analogy, and I will certainly put that in my 28J letter. That is a much better analogy to what is happening in Oklahoma as compared to what was happening in Colorado.
But that's the most important distinction, that Oklahoma does not preclude the imposition of both suspension and imprisonment.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. That is correct. And in fact, that is what happened here. The sentence was suspended, and the terms of probation were imposed.
That's the design of it, right? Let him sit there for a while, kind of get the feel of it, then we'll bring him back in and see if he's learned from that, then we can do the suspension at that point.
Yes, Your Honor, and deport him.
If he was acting up in prison or whatnot, probably wouldn't have gotten the suspension for the rest.
That is probably correct, yes.
I mean, up to the judge, but.
Right. Under the circumstances, because he was deportable, there were probably a number of factors involved. But that is certainly true. If he was not behaving himself, it is not as likely that he would have been suspended and deported.
Why isn't there an amended judgment?
Your Honor, I do not know. I actually, the document that Mr. Herman attached to his reply is a document that I recovered from the probation office, because I actually contacted them and said, I don't understand why there isn't an amended judgment here. Are you absolutely sure that there isn't an amended judgment? And they contacted Oklahoma, and this was the only other document that was available that had not actually already been attached to the PSR.
That would have made this easier, too.
Yes, Your Honor, it would have made it considerably easier.
But see, you said the suspension is not probation. It says all conditions of probation apply.
Yes, all conditions of probation, but that is not to say that it is a probationary sentence, okay, which is a separate issue from a suspended sentence.
It's confusing.
Yes, yes. I would have to say that it is. While we're actually on this issue, if I may, I'd like to just address the lenity argument. I'd like to note, first of all, that this was just raised in the reply brief. This wasn't in the initial brief. But the government will respond that, one, there really is no ambiguity in the guidelines. There are peculiar applications that occasionally arise, but the guidelines themselves are not ambiguous in this case, so he is not entitled to lenity on that ground. In addition, there is no facial inconsistency in the state court documents that would make lenity apply in that case. So in the I believe it was a Texas case,
so you
where
I think the statement that Judge Haynes just referred to, all conditions of probation apply, create that kind of ambiguity. creates that kind of...
No, Your Honor, because it wasn't saying that the sentence goes away and he's on probation now.
That's Oklahoma law.
That...
Right, was I wrong?
That I would say that is Oklahoma law and just...
We're not applying lenity to our interpretation of Oklahoma law. We apply lenity to our interpretation of federal law.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. Which is why the initial point is that there is no ambiguity in the guidelines. Anytime the guidelines, federal law and state law, intersect, there can be some oddities.
Well, the problem isn't necessarily with the guidelines. The problem was just figuring out what Oklahoma did. And I think that's
yes,
what
Judge
Jones is saying, is we don't have to apply some heightened burden there to construing an Oklahoma statute or an Oklahoma procedure. We just try to figure that out and then take that and try to figure out how the guidelines apply. And if there's ambiguity in that, the application of the guidelines to the now construed Oklahoma statute, that's when lenity comes.
Yes, Your Honor. The government would concur there. And the government also would say that the documentation that was provided to the district court was sufficient to indicate that the sentence was suspended. The fact that it did not say time served does not mean that it went away. So the government certainly proved that he had served time on a drug trafficking offense for which he received criminal history points, which was the government's burden. And that was proved by preponderance of the evidence. Now, at this point, when we look back and we say, you know, what does this order say? Well, the one thing it definitely doesn't say is that he did not serve time. And everyone agrees that he served time. And ultimately, that really is what is at issue here. Did he serve time? Did he commit a drug trafficking offense for which he served 0 to 13 months? And the answer is yes, he did. He was not.
Is there any argument this is harmless error, or is it clear that Judge Alvarez would impose a different sentence if we came out your opponent's way?
Your Honor, I don't think it's clear that she would impose a different sentence.
It's not clear the other way.
But it's not clear the other way either. If it is error, I think the government would concede it's not harmless error. Your Honors, if you have no further questions, I cede my time, and the government respectfully requests that you uphold the sentence.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Herman.
Your Honor, first of all, the government has misstated what the guideline actually says. The guideline does not say that you count the sentence based on the time actually served. Application Note 2, 4A1.2, definition of sentence of imprisonment says that the sentence pronounced governs the assessment of criminal history points, not the exact opposite, not the time actually served. And that goes to the example that I was giving you.
And the second one wasn't saying the first one was wrong. The second one was modifying the first one. So what do you say to your opponent's argument that if your client found his way back to Oklahoma and was hauled in to serve his suspended sentence, he would certainly be arguing he only has to serve 7 years and 24 days, not 8 years?
There are two arguments. First of all, the government's manner of construing Oklahoma law, as Judge Jones pointed out, isn't based in Oklahoma law. Where's the citation to a statute? Where's the citation to a court case? Under Herrera-Solorzano, the government bears the burden of showing the applicability of these enhancements. There's not one Oklahoma case or statute that the government cited to back up what has been said either about time crediting or how Oklahoma considers the previous service of the sentence.
So you don't
I looked
think the
for cases.
The constitutional argument is accurate? I mean, because the Constitution applies in Oklahoma, too.
Of course it does. But it hasn't been construed that way with regard to this law. This law hasn't been challenged in that manner. And Oklahoma, neither in statute, rule, or case law, has, at least to the government's, based on the government's brief, provided any guidance with respect
okay, so
to that at all.
If your client, ill-advisedly, in my view, goes back to Oklahoma, mm-hmm. he's going to serve 8 years and he's not going to claim that those 341 days ought to count?
The honest answer is I don't know how Oklahoma is going to treat that, and neither does the government.
You conceded to me earlier that they couldn't increase the sentence,
right?
So a modification would have to only decrease a sentence.
That is correct. There is Oklahoma case law on that. So, for example, the court could not have said he performed so badly that we now want to give him an extra 3 years. That could not have been done. So they were stuck with the 8 years that was originally imposed. But what
and
I'm telling
you, keep the 8 years is only dating back to the original pronouncement. So we're still back to my point, however you want to slice it, that he did get credit for those 341 days.
He did not, and there's no proof of that at all. And what I would give you as another example is what I gave before. When the person is in jail, pretrial detention for a year, and gets a sentence of 3 months, what happens to the remaining 9 months? It's credit. And we know that in the federal system, under 18 U.S.C. 3585B, that any prior sentence of imprisonment that has not been credited towards the service of another sentence is credited towards a subsequent federal sentence. So even in federal law, there is the contemplation that there is going to be, for lack of a better terminology, free time, time that a person's been in jail that hasn't been credited towards anything. It very well might be that Oklahoma would credit him for that time served. But once again, it's the government's burden to show that that is how the sentence should be treated. And this court in Landeros-Areola and the Tenth Circuit in Crystal, you've both dealt with issues of rehabilitative programs where there is a subsequent change of the sentence by the initial court imposing sentence. In both your case and in the Tenth Circuit case, the court looked to what did the state court law say, or the state law say? Did it require that the previously imposed term of imprisonment be recognized in some respect? And what did the plain language of the state court order changing the sentence say? Both Landeros-Areola and Crystal looked at those items to say that under Colorado law, none of these laws required crediting for time served. The orders didn't say it, and so therefore it's not a surviving sentence. It is something that has been wiped out by the change of the sentence. And yes, it was Colorado law, but the idea that the rehabilitative program aspect makes a material change to that principle is just illusory, because there is no fundamental change in what the court is doing. In each case, it's the initial sentencing court that has discretion under the law of the particular state to go back in and change its sentence, just like a federal court used to have that ability under 35B and now has that ability to go in and do it for substantial assistance. That's a change of the original sentence. Nothing under Oklahoma law required an amended judgment to do that. And I would just like to emphasize, Herrera-Solorzano dealt with not necessarily the rule of lenity, but the government's failure to meet its burden to prove under Texas law how the Texas judgment should have been interpreted. So when this court was faced with a Texas judgment that was inconsistent on its face, this court held that the government had failed to meet its burden of proof that the judgment was one that would qualify as an aggravated felony. That's very similar to what is happening here, given the argument we're having about the Oklahoma judgment.
I still don't think you've quite... I thought you conceded in the original, in your earlier argument, when I said it seemed to me that the plain language of the Oklahoma statute contemplated that it only applies to somebody who's already been in prison.
That's true, but it's the same as someone who's already been in prison on pretrial detention, for example,
no,
and in terms of crediting.
I don't agree with that at all, though. I mean, because it just says you've served X amount of time, now, you know, you may have had good behavior or whatever, and now we're modifying your sentence. But you've served it, and then for sentencing purposes, you've served it.
That may be true, but there's nothing in either the Oklahoma law or in the federal guidelines that say that that change of sentence isn't fully recognized as a change of the sentence imposed.
Let me ask you, and I'm sorry, we're at the end of the argument, and we're... I don't want us to go in circles here, but
yes, Your Honor.
As I understand it, if the guidelines were applied as you have advocated, the sentence, maximum sentence, would be 24 months?
21 months.
21 months. And this fellow's already served 2 years, right?
Less than that.
We can't let him out. This is not a habeas proceeding. All we can do is vacate and remand for resentencing. And is it not a practical matter true that if we did that, a new PSR would have to be prepared, and by the time you got around to resentencing, you're practically on the doorstep of his being out under the current term?
No, Your Honor, because if you issued your opinion within a month, for example, we would frequently go back to the court and ask to be sentenced in absentia if the government, after reading your opinion, agreed with the calculations, because they're simple calculations to make. The probation officer would issue an addendum, and the Judge Alvarez could sign the order changing the sentence within a period of a couple of weeks.
Does that happen?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
I see.
And so we could be done within a month.
So that I thought there were, okay, and I'm just asking you practical stuff here. But I understood there was a big backup in Del Rio in regard to PSRs.
Well, this is in McAllen, Your Honor, and so
That's right. I was thinking of.
And we would propose it to the court in the form of a motion to be sentenced in absentia and provide all the information to probation.
Did you ask for expedited treatment of this appeal?
I did not, Your Honor.
I mean, while I don't want to encourage people to unnecessarily seek expedited treatment, I mean, it's a consideration to make sure that if, in fact, you do win your case, that your client gets the benefit of that. I've had too many cases where everybody took all the loads of time briefing and this and that. Then they want us to rush our end of it.
I agree.
You know, if we're all going to have expedited treatment, we've got to do it from the start, and we've got to all work together to do it quickly.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not just us.
I will. I didn't understand in July when I wrote the brief how close he would be at the time, but I should have, especially as I realized you scheduled oral argument.
Fair enough.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir. You want to take a break now or what?